Hi again. Today's show is focused on the problems the world now faces in cutting climate-changing emissions from the immense amount of air travel that we now undertake. On any given day, there are around 100,000 flights across the world, flying an average distance of around 1,500 miles. That gives a total of 150 million miles of flying every day, not far short of flying to the sun and back every day of the year. The best measure of climate damage is something called effective radiative forcing, ERF, which takes into account all emissions and their impact on global warming. Therefore, the measure includes considerations of the height at which modern aircraft fly and the effects of pollutants at those altitudes. Yet the impact of aviation is actually quite small. Global flights, large as the numbers seem, account for just 3-4% of total ERF. Interestingly, carbon dioxide accounts for less than half of all aviation warming processes. One of the most important impacts comes from contrails, the water vapor trails that crisscross the sky. So as flyers, we should be just as concerned about vapor trails as the amount of carbon our airlines produce. The industry has been getting much, much more efficient in carbon terms. In 1950, a single revenue passenger kilometre of flight created 2.6 kilograms of carbon. 70 years later, the same revenue passenger kilometre created just over a tenth of a kilo. That's around 22 times less CO2. The equivalent for the car industry is about 6 times less. So, the aviation industry is doing quite well, but it's also high on everyone's priorities for reducing emissions even further. The target is nothing less than zero emissions from aircraft by 2050. To find out how that might be achieved, we talked to the Aerospace Technology Institute based at Cranfield. Our guests are Bethany Hall, an electrical engineer who has been on secondment at the ATI from Rolls-Royce, and David Debney, a senior engineer at ATI, who once also worked at the world-famous British Aero Engine Company. In this first part of the show, they speak in fascinating detail about the key issues surrounding the quest for zero-emission flight. Thanks very much for joining us, Dave and Bethany. We're really keen to have this conversation because we've been very excited recently about the sort of developments in aviation. What I think I'd like to do, or like to start with, is what exactly are you doing at ATI at the moment on the zero emissions side of things?
Yeah, so essentially at the moment, the ATI have sponsored a project called Fly Zero, and it's coming towards the end of what has been a 12-month feasibility study, looking into technologies, looking into concept aircraft, really trying to understand which technologies come out as the winners in terms of zero carbon aircraft development. So we've been looking at the technology viability, we've been looking at the commercial viability, the industrialization, what is the UK footprint, and also looking at the sustainability impacts of how to develop a zero carbon aircraft. And it's looking at the moment that our winning fuel of choice is liquid hydrogen. So we're about to release lots of outputs which conclude all of those findings.
Yeah, thanks, Bethany. Just to add a bit more to that. So aviation has used kerosene fuel almost forever. So it started out with the propeller aircraft that it was more like petrol, but kerosene is much more like diesel, and that's what's been used in gas turbines ever since they came into service. What that's given aviation is 50 years of experience with a particular fuel. If you're starting to look at things like batteries or liquid hydrogen, which is a cryogenic fuel, so cryogenic means extremely cold. Liquid hydrogen is minus 253 degrees, just to give you the number. What that means is it's a very different technical and engineering challenge. So the real purpose of Fly Zero is we're very unlikely to answer, well, we won't, we know this already. We haven't answered all of the questions relating to these new types of aircraft in the 12-month project. But what we have done is educate ourselves far better on the questions that do need to be answered. And actually, that's what needs to come next, is further research, whether it's through academia and universities or through industry, to better understand and answer these questions that we've identified to move us towards the goal, which is to get these low emission, zero carbon, more sustainable aircraft into service.
So could I just say one of the things that would interest a lot of people, I think, about zero emissions is are they really going to be zero emissions, or are we talking about just reducing greenhouse gases?
It's an excellent question. Normally, we would qualify the FlyZero zero emission statement with that it's zero tailpipe emissions, zero carbon tailpipe emissions. Depending on the method you choose, if you're combusting something or if you're using a fuel cell, there will be some emissions. Now, other emissions could be nitrogen oxides, particulates, soot, other things like that. So far, the hydrogen gives you zero carbon, but there is a level of other emissions. If you're going down a battery route, that genuinely is zero emissions, you know, during flight. Nothing comes out of the aircraft. Interestingly, some people would also argue that noise should count as an emission from an aircraft. And so that's something else that we're having to consider in the design of the concepts that we're doing at the moment. So is it zero emission? Well, we're aiming for zero emissions during operation. So as you will no doubt be aware, you know, constructing or manufacturing anything involves some level of emissions creation, whether it's through taking materials out of the ground, transporting of goods. Provided the life cycle of an aircraft doesn't change dramatically in the future, around 95% of the life cycle emissions from an aircraft come from its operation. Hence why we're targeting that as the main focus of FlyZero. I'm sure Beth can tell you a bit more about some of the other aspects of that we've been looking at as well.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question because, I mean, that the goal is zero emissions full stop, not just the ones through operation. But I've been doing some work with the sustainability team where we've been trying to look beyond just the operation emissions and looking at in the sustainable design, looking at the use phase, the maintenance, the manufacturing, and the recyclability of the materials that we're using, and trying to embed a whole sort of ethos of designing for sustainability in every element of the product lifestyle cycle, and not just limiting our vision to just the operational emissions. So the overall goal is to reduce our impacts everywhere, but obviously you've got to pick one piece of the puzzle or a part of the puzzle to solve first.
So that's really exciting. I mean, that takes it way beyond just what everybody tends to think about in terms of a battery powering an aircraft.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was important to us when we were scoping out the FlyZero project. And again, as I say, to inform further research that needs to come. And to add a bit more detail, so typically at the moment, you would expect the lifespan of an aircraft to be about 25 years in service, to put that into context.
And that's and that, of course, leaves a lot of room for saving emissions in manufacturing and so on, and of course, recycling.
Yes, an A320 or a 737, these single-aisle aircraft, Boeing and Airbus are manufacturing those at the rate of about 60 a month in both camps.
Wow.
So for a large piece of machinery, that relative to the rate of manufacture from a car manufacturer, that's very low. But for large aircraft, relative to where we've been historically, that's an extremely high rate of production.
Yeah. So in terms of these alternate fuels then, just really how many different options are there? And is there any preference, like you say, with the liquid hydrogen?
I think it depends on what type of aircraft you're looking at. So primarily, the way that we've looked at it is to split the fuels into categories of zero carbon and net zero carbon. So just to start with net zero carbon first, that's where I would use the term sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF. Okay. Essentially, there are two different types of SAF. There are biofuels, which are derived from crop residues or types of seaweed or other sort of crop-based products. Or there are what's known as power to liquids, where you quite literally manufacture synthetic fuel from hydrogen and carbon dioxide and combining them together. However, whilst those kind of fuels do absorb carbon in their production, you're still emitting carbon while the aircraft is in flight. Essentially the same amount of carbon, give or take, as you would be with kerosene. That's the reason they're called net zero, because you are still emitting carbon, but you're absorbing it in the manufacture. As with any sort of engineering or physics-based process, there are inefficiencies, which is why it's not 100% net zero. But so that's the net zero route. And then you've got the zero route. So what you're doing here is looking at alternative fuels like hydrogen. Ammonia is another one. And so, yeah, there are companies in the UK doing research on ammonia as a potential fuel for aviation and shipping at the moment. And then the final option is electrical power. I'm going to pass over to Beth to talk about that one, because that's the area she has been working in.
With electrical power, that offers a few different routes. So you can have battery electric, which is a battery powering through power electronics, powering a motor, and then the motor powering a propeller, which propulses the aircraft. But there's also opportunities there to look at the primary energy source being fuel cells, which is an option that FlyZero is quite heavily considering. And there's also opportunity with electrical power to look at hybrid models, where you might still have a gas turbine, but have that then connected to an electrical generator and connected to an electrical propulsion system. So there's a lot of different opportunities that are opened up using electrical power. But one of the biggest issues with that is battery energy densities at the moment. So at the moment, battery powered aircraft is looking at the very smaller scale, shorter haul flight, just because of the technology readiness level of the batteries being lightweight for the use in aircraft.
The density of the battery is the most important part as far as aircraft are concerned. Is that right?
Well, there are two.
Dave.
There are two aspects to it. There's energy density. So that's the amount of energy per unit mass that the battery can hold.
Yeah.
And there's also power density, which is the amount of power the battery can put out per unit mass. One of the challenges with aircraft is you need both good energy density and power density. So the way to think about this is energy density governs how far you can fly. Power density governs how fast you can take off, how fast you can accelerate to take off speed. So that's why aircraft need both of those attributes. And from a battery design perspective, those two things compete. It's very difficult to design a battery that has both of those things at the same time. Typically, the design would favour either energy or power.
Would I be right in saying that if you had a hybrid solution, in which a gas turbine was running at constant speed and generating electricity that way, and then you actually power the aircraft with that electricity, that would actually save carbon as compared to current aircraft. Is that right?
I think what you're touching on there is the idea of a more electric aircraft. I've had experience working on a more electric aircraft program, and there's definitely opportunities for optimization there, and ultimately that will lead to lower emissions, because you'll be able to refine the performance of the gas turbine and design to a more appropriate design point. But I don't think that the emission saving there is if you're still using a kerosene based gas turbine, the emission saving is not of the kind of impact that we're properly looking at in terms of zero emissions.
So from a commercial standpoint then, which of the mentioned options do you feel like will be best used for like the long haul flights to Hawaii kind of thing?
So with that, you know, in that kind of aircraft size class, typically you'd be looking at large aircraft, which are known in the industry as twin aisle, because they have two aisles going down the cabin. The research that FlyZero has done has shown that liquid hydrogen is the best zero carbon fuel option.
Okay. And why would that be then, do you think?
It's back to things like we were talking about with the battery around the energy density and things like that. So ammonia and gaseous hydrogen have design challenges around the volume that they take up for a certain amount of energy. And actually, if you're looking at zero carbon solutions, there aren't very many. So that's why we've arrived at this conclusion that liquid hydrogen is the best zero carbon fuel option going forward.
I noticed that Rolls-Royce have just signed a deal with EasyJet to look into various types of fuels. And I assume that hydrogen will be one of them. But that's for, if it's EasyJet, that's sort of short haul flying, isn't it?
Yes. The simple way of looking at that is if a technology is capable of flying long haul, it's capable of flying short haul. Flying long haul is a bigger aircraft. It takes more energy to fly the mission because it's flying further. So you could, if you can find something that could work for long haul, you could equally use it for short haul. And that's something that FlyZero has been looking at. So we've created three aircraft concepts, one in what's known as the regional space. Mm-hmm. So these are smaller aircraft. Nominally, this market segment would be between 50 and 120 passengers-ish.
Yeah.
These definitions aren't absolute, but it gives an indication. What's known as single aisle. So this is the aircraft that most people would fly on. So this is where you have a single aisle going down the middle of the cabin and typically three seats either side. So that's what most people would fly to go on their holidays on. That's about 150 to 220 seats. And then wide body or twin aisle, which are the larger aircraft that fly longer distance. So we've come up with a concept in each of those market segments to look at the options for the zero carbon fuel.
What's interesting to highlight though is the FlyZero starting point was that sort of around the 7,500 nautical miles range, which is the twin aisle aircraft. We saw that as out of scope, and that's a SAF power that is likely in the future to be the net zero SAF power aircraft, because SAF is a drop-in fuel, and we saw that larger aircraft as not being something that we were going to sort of challenge ourselves to. But actually, through the process of FlyZero, we've been able to push the range that we were looking at higher, because liquid hydrogen has proven to be able to go further than we expected.
That's interesting. Great. So you see this as a sort of incremental process where you start with the shorter range aircraft and eventually will move up to the longer range, which in the meantime will be using some sort of organic fuel like SAF.
I think that's one scenario that you could look at. And I would say that's the scenario that most people in industry would agree is most likely.
Yeah.
Historically, in aviation, technologies come in at smaller scale and kind of worked its way up in terms of in size. Whether that happens in this case is an unknown. There may actually be what we're looking at in terms of a disruptive scenario where you may wish to introduce a larger aircraft first. One of the reasons for this is hydrogen has a number of challenges, one of which is to do with the infrastructure of supplying the hydrogen to the aircraft.
Yeah.
So because jet fuel or kerosene has the very nice property that it's liquid at room temperature, it's inert, it's fairly easy to move around.
Yeah.
Hydrogen is much more challenging to transport because you have to keep it very cold and things like that. So there's an unknown quantity, which is how do you have an efficient infrastructure solution to get the fuel to the aircraft. And so what you may wish to do in the early days of a hydrogen aircraft coming into service, not many airports will have the capability to have hydrogen fuel.
Yeah.
So the reason that a disruptive scenario or an alternative scenario may favor a large aircraft coming first is because they tend to fly to a small number of major airports,
the hubs.
Whereas smaller aircraft fly to lots of small airports. So actually, you'd need hydrogen infrastructure at far more locations than you would do with a large aircraft.
Mm.
On the flip side, the reason that may not happen is because the aircraft is larger, it costs more to develop, the risk is higher, it may take longer. And these are the kind of conundrums that we've been wrestling with in FlyZero to try and work out what scenarios may happen.
Yeah.
And as ever, it's very difficult to predict the future. So what we've tried to do is lay out some potential scenarios and what that might mean for the industry. It is also worth remembering that Airbus's first ever aircraft was a wide body, a twin aisle aircraft.
One of the things I think is important for people to understand here is this concept of a drop-in fuel. By drop-in, you mean something that can be used by current aircraft?
Yeah. So I think generally speaking, the definition of drop-in is that to drop in SAF to a gas turbine, you don't need to fundamentally change the design of the gas turbine by too much. There's obviously some optimization to look at, and there's lots of testing underway. I think Rolls-Royce have definitely completed a flight test with Airbus already on SAF, but it essentially is a drop-in technology as opposed to having to redesign fundamentally how it would work.
The main barrier, as far as I can just summarize it, for batteries is the density of power and energy in the battery. The problem with hydrogen is the infrastructure and the fact that you've got to keep it so cold all the time. And the problem with SAF, of course, is that it would need presumably a huge amount of resources and land to create that much biofuel.
Yeah, I think that's a good summary. I think there are a couple of other things that are worth adding to that. One of the additional challenges with SAF, as I touched on earlier, is that it's not actually zero carbon.
Yeah.
You're still releasing carbon in flight, and it's essentially very similar to the amount with kerosene. With hydrogen, the infrastructure is a big challenge. There are a couple of aircraft-related challenges as well. The first is the volume that hydrogen requires.
Mm.
In today's aircraft, the fuel is stored in the wing, which is actually a very elegant solution from a technical standpoint, because the wing is a nice place to put it. It's very close to the center of gravity of the aircraft, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
The nature of hydrogen means that if you do the sums, for the same amount of energy, liquid hydrogen occupies just under 4 times the volume that kerosene would take up.
So you need 4 times the tanks to hold it.
Precisely. So you need 4 times the tank volume. And volumetric scaling is very powerful. So if you imagine that you had a cube that was 1 centimeter cube, that's each side, each edge is 1 centimeter long. 4 times that is each edge of the cube becomes 4 centimeters. And then that's a much, much bigger cube.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that is quite hard to visualize for people, but it is a very powerful scaling factor. What that means is that you cannot store the fuel in the wing, because obviously the external shape of the wing is critical, because that's where you generate your lift. And so you are constrained on what you can do to the external geometry if you want to maintain that lift production. Effectively, what that drives you to do is to move the fuel storage elsewhere. So there are options where you could put it in pods under the wing. There are options where you could put it inside the fuselage, obviously in a separate compartment to where the passengers sit.
Yeah.
You could put it on top of the aircraft. There are many different solutions that various researchers have proposed around the world. But it does mean that it's a shift in terms of the design of the aircraft, a fundamental shift in terms of the aircraft design.
And is there a weight penalty there in terms of range and passenger capacity, that sort of thing?
Well, this is exactly what FlyZero has been looking at. And I'm afraid I won't spoil it. But what I will say is, we've talked about the fact that hydrogen occupies a larger volume, but for the same amount of energy, hydrogen is significantly lighter than kerosene. And it's a strange quirk of chemistry that it's about 3 times lighter for the same amount of energy, but occupies about 4 times the volume.
And so the weight penalty is not that great.
Well, so the weight of the fuel will be significantly less, but because the volume is bigger, you need a bigger aircraft to house it. So as with all design activities, it's a compromise between those two things and trying to work out where the optimum sits.
And of course, FlyZero have cracked this one, have they?
I'd say cracked is probably a bit optimistic. We've certainly come up with some initial perspectives that we think are useful, as Bethany touched on earlier. The fact that we've identified that hydrogen aircraft could provide a zero carbon solution to fly long haul. So we think this hydrogen aircraft could fly over 5,000 nautical miles. So from London, you could fly to Auckland in New Zealand with one stop in the middle. Now, that's significantly further than most people previously have suggested that hydrogen aircraft could fly.
Right.
And that's why it's such a powerful finding, because that dramatically expands the scope of zero carbon options for aircraft that, that people generally before weren't aware of.
And I think just to come back to the point about going for the disruptive entry to market of tackling the large aircraft first, when you think about what we're really trying to achieve here through Fly Zero and through the recommendations, it is to combat climate change. And so to go with the disruptive one that's going to much quicker target the emissions of aircraft, I absolutely think that we need to be taking that seriously, because climate change is real and it's there. it's a really important problem to solve.
And particularly for aviation, because it tends to be at the forefront of everybody's mind when carbon usage is concerned, isn't it?
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why we have projects like Fly Zero, because I would certainly say relative to the position 10 or 15 years ago, the aviation industry has always pushed the limits of performance anyway for cost reasons. So it's always made sense with an aircraft to make it as efficient as you possibly can, because it costs less to fly. Mm. But as we've talked about, that kind of evolutionary approach doesn't go far enough to meet the goal of net zero, which the UK government has set by 2050.
Yeah.
And so you have to start looking at other options, and the industry is actively putting money, time and research into those avenues as we speak.
We'll be right back.